Well, every generation faces its own set of retirement planning challenges. Today, we're going to start a series. We're going to go through all the generations right now, starting with baby boomers who are on the clock and retiring every single day. We'll address some of the retirement questions that they are asking right now and start to try to answer those coming up next.
It's time for the Retirement Reality Podcast with the founder of Principal Preservation Services, Mike Koyanen.
Glad to have you on the Retirement Reality Podcast with Mike Koyanen, founder and owner at Principal Preservation Services. I am Ben George, and we're starting a four-part series. Mike, I know you mainly work with baby boomers. I guess that's the 1946 to 1964 generation, but I know more and more Gen X are probably coming to you, maybe even some millennials already, but no matter what age you are, it's never too early or too late to begin thinking about these things.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I would say majority of my clients are in that baby boomers, but we're starting to see some Gen X, which that's where I'm at as well. And it's fun, but it's also aging me, right? So then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a Gen X, which is getting closer to retirement because I see people of my generation retiring soon. So yeah, everybody has some different questions. Every generation is different. And, you know, some people say a certain, you know, generation, they get triggered a little bit because how that, the overview of that generation might feel to others. But, let's approach the baby boomers. I mean, that's where we spend most of our time today.
Yeah, let's start with baby boomers here for this episode. And again, hit subscribe on the podcast if you aren't a baby boomer. There's some questions here probably we'll address that might apply to you, but you also want to stay tuned and make sure you get the next episodes delivered to you. Generation X, be next, and millennials. And then we'll also hit on Gen Z as well. They're probably asking a few financial questions already, but let's start with baby boomers, Mike. Again, this is that 1946 approximately to 1964. I know there's a lot of baby boomers retiring every single day right now. So got six questions that they should be asking. Let's start with, how do you manage the risks of market volatility as you approach retirement? So as they kind of shift this mindset, getting into retirement, what should they be thinking about in terms of taking on risk in the market?
Yeah, that's a huge issue, because a lot of people don't know what to do with the volatility. Most people are in these employer sponsor plans, like a 401k plan or something similar, and they thought the answer was to go into target date funds. Well, the problem with these target date funds is they're not adjusting for market volatility. They're adjusting for the age, the year you plan on retiring. And so unfortunately, those have really suffered the last few years. But you need to be working with somebody who can show you the tolerance for risk. Most people have no idea what the risk is in their portfolios. Most people are surprised when I show them, this is where you're at. And they go, we didn't think we were that high risk. I didn't think I could lose that much. Things like that. So again, working with an advisor is going to help rather than you're your own advisor in these employer sponsor plans. We should be, I would say, it's not a blanket statement, but we should be lowering our risk as we get closer to retirement, the less exposure to the market, because, you don't have those times to, recover if there's any big market drop. When you're working, it's easier when you have time and you're putting money back into your portfolio. But as you're retired and the market drops, what are you going to do? You can't fund it anymore if you have no income. You have to make sure that you're in the right level of risk from where you're at today or in retirement.
And as you shift gears into retirement, that transition from having that steady income, having that paycheck every month or every week, to now having to manage your own income, having to deal with retirement withdrawal. So the question becomes, what's the best approach I should be taking for making this shift?
Yeah, this is a big unknown for people who come in. How do I get money? I have these IRAs. How do I get money in my bank account now? I says, well, that's easy. We set up automatic, withdrawal distributions, to our clients. So whatever that shortfall is needed, we will set up, on a certain day of the month, whatever they want to get that money. We'll withhold state and federal taxes from those accounts if they're IRAs, of course. We don't want you to be paying in. But we also look at, this is your social security. Well, you're going to get paid on, depending on when your birthday is, they pay on certain days of the month. If your birthday is in one section, they pay on the second Wednesday, or it's the third Wednesday, or the fourth Wednesday. So you want to make sure that you're getting kind of some income coming in at different times. And so we try to offset that. And some might have pensions as well. So the key is, we have the technology in place to direct deposit that information in your accounts to make things kind of seamless, in the sense you just still get the paychecks. It just comes from a different source now.
Yeah, it's difficult, and it's something that's it's very hard to do on your own. Again, why you want to work with the team like Principal Preservation Services to help make sure that you have that income plan in place, that you aren't taking out too much and that you are taking out enough, right? And then also that you are taking out, you know, that you're not taking out too little because you're in fear of what might happen in the future as well. So a big part of that. All right, so the next question then, Mike, deals with healthcare, because costs are going up all the time, and you know, it's very difficult for people shifting into retirement now to take these costs on their own oftentimes, and it can be pretty expensive. So what steps can you take to address these rising costs in your retirement plan?
Well, usually it's not a huge issue when people are retiring at 65 or later, because then you're on Medicare Part B and you pick up a supplement or an Advantage plan. And most people have been used to spending $250, $350 a month on their healthcare plan. And so essentially that's what Medicare would kind of look like for that individual. Medicare today is $175 for most people. And that's for Part B. A is free. Then you pick up a supplement. That's really depending on what state you're in and what county you're in will determine what that would cost would be. Or you can get on the Advantage plan at usually no cost or very little cost. That's not usually the issue. It's for those who want to retire sooner. And you have to either, you know, pick up COBRA for 18 months. That's from your previous employer. And you're going to pay full cost of healthcare. But that's only out 18 months. Or else if you go on the open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, well, it's income-based. And so the more money you make, the more money you pay for that plan. And I've seen some pretty expensive healthcare plans. So that's the cost, is make sure you can afford to retire when you want to retire, because some people don't put the cost of healthcare in there of retiring at 60. Financially, you think you can do it, but then also you look at the cost of the healthcare piece, and that might cause you not to. And even if you can, I've seen this before, or even if you can afford to pay it, some people are like, I'm not paying that for healthcare. I will continue to work to save $600, $800 a month in healthcare costs, right? So it's situation is different for everybody. The other thing to take into account, and I think a lot of people don't think about this, we have a lot of 3M retirees. They get this retirement medical savings account. It's like an HSA they get when they retire, or get this package, or maybe you have a health savings account from a high deductible health savings insurance plan. A lot of times I've seen some big, you know, $50,000, $75,000, $85,000, where that's what you've had it for. You can get reimbursed for your healthcare plan and retire sooner. I mean, it's nice to have that. It's pretty much free healthcare for a few years by using those plans to pay for your healthcare costs. So that's something to consider. I think a lot of people forget about using it, or they don't even like to touch it because it's a nice size account and is growing. But that's kind of what it's for retirement.
If you have questions for Mike as we go through this, I always encourage you to give him a call at 855-987-8888 if you are a baby boomer and trying to answer some of these questions and haven't really put a plan in place to address these different issues. Now is the time to do that. And it goes on to our next one, Mike, which, you know, I think a lot of people begin thinking a little bit more about their legacy and how to pass on their wealth. But how do you do that without sacrificing your own retirement, Mike? So what's the best approach to that, and how do you help people answer that question?
Yeah, that's a tough thing, because I hear people want to give money, you know, to their kids or grandkids. And sometimes I kind of halt them. I go, well, hey, you don't know how long you're going to live. You don't know what the future might be. I don't want to be, you know, negative Nelly in a sense where I'm just, you know, thinking the worst, but I've seen it, where I've seen where people have given too much to their kids or grandkids, and then they do sacrifice the retirement where they're going back to work, or they're still working that part-time job. They said they were going to work for a year or two after retirement, and here it is 5 years plus later because they're spending, or they keep putting themselves in debt. They're giving people, but it's affecting your plan. So the key is to understand how to do it appropriately if you can. Younger generations will understand that you don't have that same income in retirement as you did when you're working. So I think having that conversation, where I know my, you know, parents are, you know, have my parents and my in-laws have said, we're retired. We don't live off of what we used to make. We can't afford to give these birthday gifts the way we did before. And we understand that. And we said, you don't have to give us anything. We don't expect that at all. So I think some of it's the expectations, the wrong expectations sometimes that we think that our kids or grandkids are expecting from us, or even sometimes the wrong expectations from our kids or grandkids expecting you to do more. Where I've heard children say, to my clients, you're spending my inheritance. And like, that is not your inheritance. If you get something, great, but with that attitude, I hope you get nothing, in my opinion. I mean, that's just where I come from. You should be thankful if you get anything. So the key is do some planning. I know you can give $18,000 a year without being claimed on tax returns. If you can afford to do that, gifting money to churches is a good way to do it through your IRAs once you're 70 and a half or older. But the key is understanding what you can do without affecting your retirement. There's a lot of people who can't do what they want to do. The key is be working, yearly with your advisor to find out what is the amount that is comfortable with me gifting, with I'm not having to go back to work. And so again, a lot of those questions don't get asked, when they're giving. Some people just give and then they come back to me and say, I just gave this away. And then they're like, is that okay? I'm like, well, it's kind of too late now. I wouldn't do that much in the future. But, I just want to have people look at the big picture. And I think sometimes they're not.
I got a couple more questions. These are, again, questions that the baby boomer generation is asking. And Social Security is another big topic. Mike, I'm sure you probably have this conversation with just about anyone that comes into your office in this generation. But what's the best way to maximize those benefits is a question that you probably get a lot, right, to help make sure that you kind of secure that income in retirement.
Yeah, I just had this question half an hour before we got on our recording this morning. There's no blanket statement from that. File and suspend benefits ended in 2016, April 30th, 2016. File and restrict benefits ended December 31st, 2023. That was the last date you could have done any of that. So some of those free kind of money programs are gone. There are some still available. The key is you need to find something individualized for you that's not separated from your pension and your retirement investments. It needs to be integrated together to find out what is the best way for you to take your benefits. It shouldn't be looked at as a totally separate option or a separate decision. It needs to be working in together with your investments, with your pension if you have one, and find out what is the best date. So that's the best answer I can give today with all the things that have changed. 10 years ago, it would have been a totally different answer for you. But this is where Social Security has evolved today. You really need to put more time and effort today than you ever have, because that a lot of those free money options are gone, and it's putting a little more stress and strain on the current or the future enrollees in Social Security.
All right, last one then. I know people with the housing market kind of where it is are considering downsizing, and this is a common question for anybody that goes in retirement that has more house than they need or wants to move or relocate. But is that something you should consider, Mike? And how do you go about trying to figure out whether downsizing and relocating is the best decision for you in retirement?
I had this conversation again last week, and we ran scenario, do I stay or do I sell and rent? And for that situation, it was selling was going to be a better situation long-term, not running out of money. The other option was running out of money. So everybody's situation is different, but sometimes you find the house is just not right. You had a two-story when the kids were home. Now it's like, man, you got a bad knees, you got bad hips or replacements, doing the stairs. It's just not reasonable. And you don't need the big house. It's just two of you, and it used to be four or five of you or more. So now the key is, do you just need something that's a little bit low-key? Do you want to be mowing the lawn? Do you want to be shoveling snow up here in the upper, most years, not like this year? If you're in a homeowners association, well, they'll cut the lawn and they'll mow. Some people want that. Some people don't. The key is, I think downsizing is a normal thing. And I think the best term, in my opinion, so it doesn't sound so negative connotation, is right-sizing your house. You should be in the right size for where you're at. And I think downsizing does kind of feel like things are coming, it's not positive. No, this is a positive thing. Be in your retirement home. Be in a house that you want to spend the next 20, 30 years in. That's what it should be looked at from that point of view. And sometimes when we sell that house and you move in, you buy a townhome, you might have another $100,000. You might have an extra $300,000-$400,000 to invest, even conservatively, to help your portfolio grow even more. So sometimes it's necessary for some, and some people it's not. But the key is finding that house that you can actually be comfortable and be happy living in retirement for the next, you know, 2-3 decades.
All right. So these are just some of the questions that baby boomers are asking right now as they mm-hmm. prepare for retirement or head into retirement. We'll get into the Gen Z, Gen X, millennials coming up over the next few episodes. So please hit subscribe and hope you enjoy this series. And if you have any questions specifically about your retirement, again, best thing to do is call someone that can help you with this, like Mike and his team at Principal Preservation Services. They do it every day and answer questions like these with clients with all kinds of different scenarios. So they've seen a lot of these different things play out and have learned mm-hmm. and can apply that wisdom and knowledge to your situation. So 855-987-8888 is that number. And I want to get a couple of mailbag questions, Mike. We haven't had enough questions today for you, so let's get a couple more before we get out of here. Here's one from Tony. He says, as a pastor, I have the opportunity to opt out of Social Security. Is this something I should consider?
I've seen this before, Ben. I'm not a huge fan of it because now you get bigger paychecks, and the whole point of it is, well, I can use this extra money to invest somewhere else. You know what happens? They don't invest somewhere else. So now you get to retirement age, and I've met with several pastors in retirement and with little or no Social Security because they might have qualified for it outside of pastoring, but now they have no Social Security or very little because they opted out of it. Not a huge fan, and they haven't taken that money and reinvested it. And really no fault of their own in a sense, because when you have the board taking your pay, finding out the pay for that pastor, a lot of times I think it's a slap in the face where I've seen what these church boards have approved for pay and how you're supposed to raise a family on something like that. But I would say no, I would not opt out, just from my experience in the past. By taking that extra money and reinvesting, I don't think that'll happen.
All right, great question, Tony. Thank you for that. And here's one from Annie as well. I want to put in a screened-in porch, but the only way I could pay for it would either be taking an extra $20,000 out of my IRA this year, and in parentheses, I'm already taking about $25,000 from my regular income, or the second option is taking out a home equity loan to cover it. Which do you think's better?
Yeah, and I in this situation, Ben, I get this weekly, usually multiple times a week, where somebody wants money for a home project, they want money for paying off credit cards, or they want money for, you know, paying off the house, because the house you only have $20,000 or $50,000 left. Well, the problem with that is when we show the taxes that you're going to pay, the tax bath, I should call it, that you will incur when you do that, it doesn't make sense. You're better off doing, even with interest rates being high on a home equity line of credit, which we call a HELOC, you know, interest rates are higher right now, but it's interest only. And these rates are going to be coming down, but it's something more affordable, and you can get that work on getting that paid off sooner. But when I show people, if you're, just say you're in a 22 bracket, Annie, I don't know what bracket you're at, I don't know what state you're in, but let's just say you're in the state of Minnesota, at 7.5%, just call it 8% state taxes, 22 federal, 30% taxes on that, you're going to pay $6,000 in taxes, assuming you're in a 22% tax bracket. Where when you look at taking out a $20,000 loan at, you know, let's just say 8%, here, let me do the quick math here, Ben. $20,000 at 8%, you know, you're looking at a monthly payment, minimum payment of about $133 a month. Well, you could definitely afford that and make some chunks to get that principal down, make it more affordable. You're not taking out huge withdrawals out of your investments to pay so much taxes. So I would most likely recommend not to take it out of your IRAs. I will say IRAs are meant to supplement your retirement, not for debt situations.
All right. Very good. Thank you for those questions, Annie and Tony. And I hope you enjoyed our conversation today about The questions that baby boomers are asking right now heading into retirement, again, we'll continue this series with future generations as well. So, again, no matter kind of where you fall, you want to subscribe, follow along with us, and pass this along to anyone that falls in these generations as well. Hopefully this can help them out as they're preparing for their future. Mike, as always, thanks for your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks for leading the way. Thanks, Ben.
Investment advisory services offered through Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Alpha Star, Principal Preservation Services, LLC, and Principal Wealth Services, LLC are separate and independent entities. Insurance products are offered through Principal Preservation Services, LLC, a Minnesota and Wisconsin insurance agency. Investment advice is offered through Principal Wealth Services, LLC. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products offered by Principal Preservation Services, LLC. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company and are not offered or guaranteed by AlphaStar.